You're listening to Lace Up with your host, BJ Johnson II. Grab your tennis shoes, get your cleats, because it's time to lace up. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Lace Up. I'm your host, BJ Johnson II, ready to give you the latest, hottest news and updates in the world of sports. I appreciate everybody jumping in and joining the podcast and giving me a little bit of your time to talk some good, healthy sports talk as always. Man, I hope everybody's had a great week. I hope everybody's staying warm, man. It's cold outside, y'all. It's that time of the year. We're getting towards, you know, Thanksgiving is next week. Man, that's crazy, y'all. Thanksgiving is next week, man. I can't wait, man. I can't wait to eat all of that food, man. I don't know about y'all, but Thanksgiving is definitely, like, one of the best holidays. It's not my favorite holiday. Christmas is my favorite holiday, but Thanksgiving, man, is right up there, man. I love, definitely love Thanksgiving, love being around family, love just, you know, enjoying that time. I just love holiday season in general. But yeah, like I said, man, this weather is crazy, man. I'm just coming off of a cold, you know. Thank God I'm able to do this show and not sound crazy like I was earlier this week, man. Y'all would have thought I was dead or something the way I was sounding, but you know, shout out to DayQuil and NyQuil, I should say, and turmeric tea, man. Shout out to that, man. Get y'all some of the turmeric tea and some honey, man. It'll save your life. But hey, man, we got some good stuff to talk about, man. A lot of good stuff to jump into, man. Winding down these last few weeks of college football, man. It's an exciting time, and also, you know, obviously a sad time, because that just lets us know that football is coming and nearing the end. But, you know, nevertheless, man, we still got some time left, so we're not gonna get too sad. We're just gonna enjoy the rest of this ride of the college football season. You know, obviously we got the NBA going on, but you know, it's still in the early stages. College basketball just kicked off as well. So like I said, man, let's jump into things, man. Let's keep it in the college football world. Like I said, just a perfect way to transition into our topics for tonight. So what I'm going to do is run down the updated college football playoff rankings. Then I'm going to tell you, you know, who I think is going to be, you know, the four teams that'll get in ultimately. So, looking at the current college football rankings, I'm going to just really focus on the top 10 right now, because these are the teams that are really in, you know, conversations about the playoff. Really and truly, everybody has really limited it to, like, that top 7. So they pretty much have excluded, like, the rest of everybody from the conversations that have been having. That doesn't mean that everybody doesn't have a chance that's in the top 10, because mathematically everybody is still alive. But, you know, obviously they're looking at the probability of, you know, the top 10 making it. And obviously the teams that are, you know, in the top 6 have a higher probability. So that's what they've been focusing on. So what I'm going to do is, like I said, we're going to run down the top 10. I'm going to tell you everybody's remaining schedules. We're going to talk conference championship games. And then, like I said, I'm going to give you my who I think is going to be in that 4. So the top 10 as it follows, man, we got UGA coming in at 1. They're 10-0. Ohio State is 2 at 10-0 as well. Michigan's 3. They're 10-0. And TCU is 4. They're 10-0. So those top 4 teams currently, they're all still undefeated. Then you have Tennessee at number 5, they're 9-1. LSU is 6, they're 8-2. USC 7, they're 9-1. Alabama is 8, they're 8-2. Clemson is 9, they're 9-1. And Utah is number 10 at 8-2. So these are your top 10 in the college football playoff rankings as it stands right now. So looking at the remaining schedules of each of these teams. So Georgia, their remaining schedule, they face Kentucky on the road this weekend. Then they are at home against Georgia Tech. And then, obviously, they have their SEC championship game versus number 6 LSU. Ohio State, they go to Maryland this weekend, and they face number 3 Michigan at home. Michigan has Illinois at home this weekend. Then they go, like I just said, to number 2 Ohio State. TCU is on the road at Baylor this weekend. Then they're at home against Iowa State, and then they have the Big 12 championship game, which their opponent is going to be to be determined. But they have, you know, made their mark and have established themselves as one of the teams that will be representing in the Big 12 championship. Then you have Tennessee. They're on the road this weekend at South Carolina. Then they host they're on the road at Vandy. So their remaining two games are actually on the road. Then the LSU Tigers, they're going to be at home against UAB this weekend. Then they go on the road against Texas A&M. And like I've already mentioned, they have the SEC Championship game against number one Georgia. USC, they are on the road this weekend at number 16 UCLA. Then they're at home against number 18 Notre Dame. Alabama is at home this weekend against Austin Peay, and then they remain home against Auburn in the Iron Bowl. Clemson is at home against Miami, and next week they'll be at home against South Carolina. And they have we will be facing in the ACC Championship game, they will be coming up against number 13 UNC. And then last but not least, you got Utah. They're on the road at number 12 Oregon this weekend, and then they're going to be at home against Colorado. So, those are your remaining schedules for the top 10 teams. Again, just to run down conference championships, Big 12 championship, it's going to be number 4 TCU versus whoever is to be determined. SEC championship game, number 1 UGA versus number 6 LSU. The ACC championship game is number 9 Clemson versus number 13 UNC. Pac-12 championship is to be determined right now. Don't have the two teams that will be playing in that game just yet. Still a lot that can happen in these final 2 weeks. And then the Big Ten championship game, obviously, is going to be number 3 or number 2, or Michigan, number 3 Michigan or number 2 Ohio State versus whoever, which would be either Purdue, Illinois, or Iowa. Because right now, as it stands, Purdue, Illinois, and Iowa, they're within one game of each other for that top spot on the other side of the Big 12 standing. So we will definitely see what happens there. And obviously, you know, looking at this, you know, a lot of people, like I said, they're focusing on these top 6 teams, but, you know, they look at a team like Alabama. You know, obviously Alabama is a team that people have been talking about, saying like they have no shot at the playoff. They are mathematically eliminated, but I beg to differ. You know, I'm looking at, you know, obviously Alabama sitting at number 8. Obviously, it's a long shot, according to most people, but can it happen? Absolutely, and I'm going to tell you how it can happen. And, you know, I know a lot of people would probably look at me like, oh, yeah, you're one of those Alabama fans that are just going to continue to, you know, try to make a scenario where you guys can still get in. You know, I'm really just telling it like it is. You know, obviously, like, it's not like I'm expecting this to happen, but the possibility of it happening, it could very well happen. And if you really look at it, let's just say, for example, okay, you look at Michigan. Let's just say Michigan loses at home against Illinois, right? So that kind of knocks Michigan out of the conversation. Then they turn around and let's just say they lose at Ohio State. But I mean, if they lose against Illinois, that knocks them out of the Big Ten championship game anyway. But let's just hypothetically say they lose to Illinois, then they turn around and lose to Ohio State. I mean, Michigan, Ohio State, they're going to cancel each other out regardless. But, you know, let's just say that wouldn't take Michigan out of the scenario, right? Then you got TCU. Let's say they drop this game at Baylor, okay? They drop the game to unranked Baylor. That's pretty much going to take them out of a conversation because their strength of schedule really doesn't give them a lot of leeway to lose a game. And, you know, if they were to lose the Big 12 championship game, that would really put the icing on the cake. But I think if TCU lost to an unranked Baylor team and still won, like, the Big 12 championship, I still don't think that would be enough to get them in just because, like I said, their strength of schedule and who they played this far really – excuse me, it really just doesn't jump out at a lot of people. But, you know, I mean, obviously they would have an argument as a one-loss Big 12 champion, but who knows? You know, we'll definitely see. Tennessee, I don't expect them to lose at South Carolina or Vandy, so that would put them, you know, obviously, like, right in the mix. So they would be in there. Then you look at LSU. LSU still has to go on the road against Texas A&M. Let's just say they drop that game. Or even if they don't drop that game, I do expect LSU to lose to Georgia in the SEC championship game. So that would knock LSU out of the conversation. Then you have USC. USC could very well lose this game on the road against UCLA. USC struggled against teams that can run the football. UCLA is a team that can't run the football. USC also has lost their starting running back for the remainder of the season. That will, you know, be a big blow. So, you know, obviously, this is a game that, you know, they can't lose. And then they host a Notre Dame team who blew out Clemson. You know, Notre Dame is no pushover. So that can knock USC out of the conversation. So you're talking about literally Michigan, TCU, LSU, and USC knocking themselves out of the conversation, being able to be knocked out of the conversation, not all in the same weekend, because really this weekend Michigan and TCU are those teams. Michigan, TCU, and USC could all be pretty much knocked out of the conversation after this weekend if they were to lose. Now, that only leaves Clemson, who's behind Alabama, because obviously Alabama would move up. Clemson is right behind, and they still have Alabama, a two-loss Alabama above a one-loss Clemson, because they still, you know, look at that blowout loss that they took against Notre Dame. That can't go unnoticed, obviously. And like I said, let's just say the only way that I, you know, see like that would give in this situation where Bama would be in trouble is because if Clemson is a one-loss ACC champion, they would put Clemson in over Alabama. But let's just say they go to the ACC championship game and they lose to a number 13 North Carolina. They're not going to put a one-loss North Carolina in the top four. Even if they are the ACC champion, they don't have any top 25 wins. Their only top 25 win would be against, let's just say if they play NC State this weekend, they're number 24. So if they were to knock off NC State, that would be their first top 25 win. If they knock off Clemson, that'll be their second top 25 win. Cool. But I still don't think that would be enough to put them in the four. So then you would have a situation in a scenario where it would literally be Georgia, Ohio State. You would move Tennessee up to three. And then you would have Alabama being compared to all the rest of these two-loss teams. And obviously, Alabama would be the best two-loss team out of that situation. So, like I said, y'all, it may seem far-fetched to a lot of people, but like I said, one weekend, it's 2 weeks left, but one weekend could change the entire course of the rest of the season. So you never know what could happen. So looking at the Final Four prediction, obviously, you know, I expect it to be UGA, Ohio State. I do think Tennessee is going to get in at three. Excuse me. And then that fourth spot, you know, I would love for it to be Alabama. I definitely would love for it to be Alabama. The fourth spot is hard. You know, I'm obviously, you know, I'm going to predict Alabama to get in there because those are my guys. But realistically speaking, you know, if everything were to go as people probably would expect it to go, I'm still, like I said, I'm not going to say TCU. Just because I do think that TCU is going to drop this game against Baylor. I really do. I could see if all else fails, if Clemson were to run the table and get in, Clemson would be that 14. I don't think that they would. But if USC ran the rest of the table, I mean, you would be talking about a two-loss Pac-12 champion against a one-loss ACC champion. So that's the biggest difference there when I'm looking at it, just because USC, well, actually, I mean, they don't have two losses just yet. So let me excuse me when I say that. If there's a situation where you have a one-loss Pac-12 champion and a one-loss ACC champion, USC would get in over Clemson. I definitely think USC would get in over Clemson, especially because USC's only loss was by 1 point on the road against Utah. So, and Utah is in the top 10 right now. So, they've continued to win. So, in that scenario, let's just say, like, if the scenario didn't play out, like I just said, for Alabama to get in, I could see it being Georgia, Ohio State, Tennessee, and USC being in the mix. And then, you know, obviously, if in that situation, you know, I would probably expect it, depending on how they put it, I would expect it to be, I would expect them to put, like, Georgia and Tennessee on opposite sides, obviously, to rematch in a national championship, if like I say, if that was the case. But I'm going to keep the faith, man. I'm still rolling with the Tide, man. Let's do this thing. But like I said, man, if things play out the way they do, and if you have a situation where it's two one-loss champions, conference champions, like I said, that being USC being a Pac-12 champion against Clemson, the ACC champion, I think USC would get in over them. So that's my prediction there. So, like I said, man, we'll definitely see what happens. You know, obviously, like, this is one of those situations where it's a lot of pressure. It's a lot of pressure, so, you know, I'm just excited to see how everything's going to shake up. I'm praying for chaos. I'm definitely praying for chaos. But let's keep the college football talk going, man, because I've heard a lot of crazy talk that's going on right now, and it's really disrespectful, and it's really been bothering me, and I haven't been able to get what I needed to say off my chest, but I'm getting ready to do it now, man. It's because it's getting ridiculous right now. There's a lot of analysts out here, like, you know, Paul Feinbaum and some other guys out here that are saying that college football has caught up to Nick Saban in Alabama, and Alabama's dynasty is coming to an end. These days of, you know, Alabama are coming to an end. And I find that to be highly disrespectful. Like, really? College football has caught up to Nick Saban? Absolutely not. This is a huge overreaction. I mean, you to say that Nick Saban has lost his touch and college football has caught up to him, that's completely ridiculous. That is a idiotic statement. And it pisses me off when I hear people talk like that, because it's like, you're going to sit up here and act like Alabama hasn't played in 6 out of the last 7 national championships. Literally. Listen to what I just said. Alabama has played in 6 out of the last 7 national championships. And they've gone 3-3, obviously, in that span. But to sit up here and say that college football is catching up to Nick Saban in Alabama, where? How? Because the one year Georgia finally beats us after 8 years, Kirby Smart finally gets over the hump. And Georgia wins a national championship after 40-plus years. Now the dynasty's over. Now Georgia's the new Alabama. Like, stop playing, man. Stop playing. Everybody knows Alabama's the standard of college football. Everybody knows that college football isn't college football without Alabama. Alabama's always going to be in the conversation, especially next year. When they expand, well, not next year, the year after next, whatever, whenever they decide that, expand this into a 12-team playoff, that's only going to open the door for Alabama to just make it every single year. Alabama has made the college football playoff every single year except one. And should they miss the playoffs this year, that's literally going to be their second time since the college football playoff started in 2014. But college football is caught up to Nick Saban in Alabama. Stop playing, man. Are y'all for real? Stop playing. I challenge anybody when it comes to that. It's easy it's so easy for people to say, you know, the times that you lose, yeah, you lose two games. Like, this hasn't happened to Alabama. And Alabama hadn't lost this many games literally since I was a freshman. Like, we hadn't lost two games in a row and all of that extra stuff. Like, that stuff like that has not happened to Alabama in a very long time. They lose two games this year on the last play of the game, you know, by a combined 4 points in two hostile environments, one being in Tennessee, one being in LSU. One was a field goal. Another was a two-point conversion in overtime. It took all of that to beat Alabama, literally. Just think about that now. It took all of that. Alabama lost the games, but look at, take a look at the effort that it took. It took 52 points to beat Alabama. And it took an overtime two-point conversion to beat Alabama. Come on now. Now everyone all of a sudden says the dynasty is over. Stop. Did they underperform this year? Yes. Both on the offensive and the defensive end. Like, offensively, have not had that true number one wide receiver. It's literally each and every week. Whoever's going to be number one is whoever's number one for that given week. There hasn't been one guy that has stepped up to be number one. Ja'Cory Brooks could have been Ja'Cory, but he hadn't really lived up to you know, what people thought. Jermaine Burton was supposed to be that guy. That didn't pan out how it was supposed to be. Receivers haven't been getting the separation like, you know, Bryce is used to in the past when he had Jamison Williams, a guy that could take the top off of a defense. John Metchie, you know, guys that could really, really complement each other really well. So it's been different this year. You know, you got a lot of young wide receivers, not to make any excuses, but there hasn't been a true number one wide receiver. There have been some young guys that have stepped up, though, that I'm excited about the future. You know, guys being like Kobe Prentice, who, you know, worked himself in the starting lineup as a freshman wide receiver. You got Isaiah Bond. You know, you got Kendrick Law. You got guys like that. Like, that. These are the future receivers at Alabama. And then you still got Tyler Harrell, the transfer from Louisville, who hadn't played all year, really, because of an injury to his foot. So, excuse me. So, you look at that and you know, obviously, and then let's not talk about our offensive coordinator with his inability to be able to call games that make sense. You know, Bill O'Brien is terrible, and I can't wait for Bill O'Brien to get out of Tuscaloosa. Like, I'm so tired of Bill O'Brien, and it's just, it's really painful to sit up there and have to watch us offensively in the way that he calls games, because he's so stubborn. He doesn't do what makes sense. He doesn't like to run the ball. He's literally just, I don't know. Let me not say anything too crazy. But, you know, obviously Jahmyr Gibbs, he's our leading receiver on the team as at the running back position. That shouldn't be happening, you know. That should never happen. But, you know, that's where we are. Defensively, definitely, like, you know, Pete Golden, tired of him too. He needs to get out of Tuscaloosa. You know, definitely has had, you know, both of these guys, offensive and defensive coordinator, have had us underperforming really badly. Did they live up to the Alabama standard? No. They have not. You know, it's gotten to the point, you know, Bo Scarborough, a former Alabama running back, came back to the team, you know, came and talked to the team this week. And they said, Nick Saban said he put his finger on the table and told them, listen, like, this isn't the way we played football when I was here in Alabama. We made teams wish they never played us ever again after they walked off the field. You know, they lost that culture and that grit that Alabama's used to playing with. So they need to develop that culture back. And I think that if Saban could get more of the former players to come back and talk to these guys, like, I think that that's definitely going to help out a lot too. They still obviously got to go out there and execute, but I think hearing it from guys who have been there and done that, who have lived, breathed, and really established that culture at Alabama from that football program, hearing those guys come back, like Derrick Henry, the Mark Ingrams, you know, guys like that, you know, defensively, I mean, you could bring back every defense from 09, really. So, you know, get a Reuben Foster to come back in there. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, literally, come talk to these guys, man, and get these boys right. But will they be back next year? Absolutely. I definitely think Alabama is going to be back next year. I'm not, you know, going to sit up here and write them off like everybody in the college football world is doing, because everybody loves to pray for your downfall. You know, they love to see Alabama struggle. Everybody loves it when Alabama is, which is very rare. So the times where Alabama does lose and they're not in the conversation, everybody's going to celebrate. And it's cool, you know. When you're the standard, you're definitely going to be hated on. But that's okay. Like I said, everybody enjoy this while you can. But like I said, it's not over yet now. It's not over yet. But should Alabama not participate in the playoff this year? Don't worry about it. Don't even worry about it. I promise you Alabama will be back. You talking about next year, got the number one recruiting class coming in next year too? Come on now. Saban's not going anywhere right now. We good. Trust and believe. So, it is what it is. You know, but hey, I'm done. I promise y'all I'm done. I'm going to move on. I had to get that off my chest. You know, I definitely wanted to say more, but I'm not going to spend too much time on it because y'all know what time it is, man. Y'all know, like I said, it's nothing else that needs to be said about it. But moving on, man, let's talk about my guy, Justin Fields, man. Justin Fields has been balling, man. He's been balling, breaking records over these past 5 weeks, man. He's been on a tear. He's been lighting it up. I mean, to see what Justin Fields is doing right now, it's absolutely incredible. I mean, like I said, this last month, he has been on fire. He set multiple records. He's outshining all the quarterbacks in his draft class. Everybody who, you know, who has something to say about Justin Fields, like, oh, you know, talking about what he could and couldn't do. Everybody throwing shade at Justin Fields early on in the season about him being able to read defenses and him being able to make the throws and all this crazy stuff that people have been talking about. Just negating the fact that he didn't have offensive line. The play calling wasn't really utilizing him and his skill set and really being able to highlight his strengths. But now Luke Getsy, our offensive coordinator, has really been opening that offense up. And you're seeing what Justin Fields has been able to do without having the weapons that people in other quarterbacks in the league have. With no, still really doesn't have an offensive line at all. And like I said, wide receiver core. I mean, you bring over Chase Claypool, which is good. But, you know, he's only been there for a couple weeks now. This is his third week. You got Darnell there. But other than that, you know, Cole Kmet is coming along in tight end position. But other than that, you know, wide receivers is thin, you know. So let me just read through what Justin has done over these past few weeks. I mean, he set multiple records, like I said, man. It's been crazy. So week 7 at the Patriots is when it started. So we went 13-21 for 179 yards and one passing touchdown. Had 14 carries for 82 yards and one rushing touchdown. Week 8 at the Cowboys, 17-23, 151 yards, two passing touchdowns. 8 carries, 60 yards, and one rushing touchdown. Week 9 versus the Dolphins, 17-28, 123 yards, and 3 passing touchdowns. Then he also had 15 carries for 178 yards and 1 rushing touchdown. In this game, he broke Michael Vick's record for the most rush yards in a regular season game by a quarterback in the Super Bowl era. It's in NFL history now. And check this out. Justin Fields' cleats from that game, They're in Canton, Ohio, right now in the Hall of Fame. They're getting prepped to be on display in the Hall of Fame right now. Like, that's insane. To break a Michael Vick record, bro. Like, and have your cleats in the Hall of Fame. Like, think about that. Literally sit there and think about that. Then week 10 versus the Lions last week, 12 of 20, 167 yards, two passing touchdowns. Then he had 13 carries for 147 yards and two rushing touchdowns. This is the most rushing yards by a quarterback against the Lions. And he passing Randall Cunningham, who had 110 yards in 1986 against the Lions. And let me just read through the records for Justin Fields, okay? So he has a Bears record for the longest touchdown run by a quarterback, which is 61 yards. Then he eclipsed that the following week with a 67-yard touchdown run. He's the first Bears quarterback to rush for at least 100 yards in back-to-back games. First Bears player to run for at least 147 yards in consecutive games since Walter Payton. First quarterback in NFL history to rush for touchdowns of at least 60 yards in back-to-back games, and first to run for at least 140 yards in consecutive games. Should I keep going? Yeah, I'm going to keep going. First player ever to run for two touchdowns, throw for two touchdowns, and rush for at least 100 yards in a game. Fields is 325 yards on the ground, are the most by a quarterback in a two-game span in NFL history, breaking Lamar Jackson's record of 268 yards in 2019. Fields' 555 yards rushing over his last five games are the most by an NFL quarterback in that span in the Super Bowl era. On last Sunday, Fields became the fourth player in NFL history with a 50-yard-plus touchdown run and a 50-yard-plus touchdown pass, joining Lamar Jackson, Cam Newton, and Hall of Fame quarterback Ace Parker. And finally, he's the fifth player in the Super Bowl era with one rushing touchdown and one passing touchdown in four straight games. Insane, y'all. Like I said, Fields is lighting it up. I don't want to hear anybody, excuse me, jump. Look, the bandwagon is still open right now. Because I'm telling you, everybody who has something to say about Fields, get ready, bro. Like, listen, the bandwagon is still open. I want everybody who has something to say about Fields and the Bears, like, keep that same energy next year. Bears have $125 million in cap space for 2023, which is the most in the NFL in 11 draft picks. Get Fields on the offensive line and some wide receivers. This team will be serious contenders. Watch, mark my words right now. Mark my words. Mark my words. Like, trust me. Like, I'm telling y'all right now, like, I'm literally laughing because I can see it. Like, I literally can see it. I literally can see it, clear as day. But anyway, let's move on, man. Let's talk about the Philadelphia Eagles. So the Eagles suffered their first loss of the season at home against the Commanders. So questions are, you know, were they exposed? You know, there's a lot of people out here that's talking about, oh, the Eagles were exposed. You know, it's a bad loss. Obviously, it was a bad loss. Losing to the Commanders 32-21 at home. So now they are 8-1. They're no longer the only undefeated team in the NFL. So let's just look at the game stats here. And first and foremost, before I do that, no, I think it's an overreaction to say the Eagles were exposed. I definitely think, you know, that's everybody calm down, pump the brakes. That's an overreaction. So looking at the game, the Eagles, they allowed Washington to get 25 first downs, which is more than what they're allowing their opponents on average. Their opponents are only averaging 17 first downs this year. They allowed Washington to convert 57% on third down, which their opponents are averaging 41% on the year. Washington had double the amount of plays, had 81 plays to 47, and they dominated the time of possession. So they had the ball 40 minutes to the Eagles' 19 minutes. The Eagles allowed 152 rushing yards, which their opponents are only averaging 124 yards per game, rushing yards per game. Eagles were held under 100 yards rushing, which they normally average 124 rushing yards per game. And then the Eagles were 3-3 in the red zone. So they were able to get down there, just not able to capitalize on, I mean, half of those possessions they were able to capitalize, but, you know, obviously that wasn't enough. And then, last but not least, man, they had four total turnovers in this game. So they had three fumbles lost and one interception. No, I don't think the Eagles were exposed. Like I said, I think that they just had a bad game. Uncharacteristic-like mistakes. It's obviously they did not play Philadelphia Eagles football. Now, the refs did, let's be clear, the refs did miss a clear face mask on one of the fumbles that did lead to Washington leading to Washington taking the lead in the game. So, that was a huge blown call. And then, obviously, you had the roughing the passer, the late hit penalty on Tyler Heinicke late in the game when the Eagles had them stop. You know, just a bad decision by the Eagles, you know, defender, just not being smart there. The Eagles were lackadaisical on the defensive end, just couldn't get any consistency on the offensive side of the ball, you know, especially in the second half, really and truly. And then, you know, but like I said, the Eagles are still first in the NFC East, tied with the Vikings for the best record in the NFL. And the Eagles have a favorable remaining schedule where, you know, they'll be favored in all of those games, which they should be. I mean, like I said, they're still up there. I'm still, you know, looking at the Eagles as one of the, you know, obviously the team to beat alongside the Vikings in the NFC. So everybody pump the brakes, everybody calm down. The Eagles will be fine. It's just a bad game. And last but not least, man, let's look at the Golden State Warriors. So, you know, the Warriors, they started 0-8 on the road for the first time since 1989. So, you know, what's really the issue there? So, looking at the Warriors, like I said, since 1989, 1990, you know, since this is the first time they've gone 0-8 since that time when they actually started 0-9 in 89 and 90. It's the longest overall road losing streak by a defending champion since the 1998-99 Chicago Bulls. You know, Curry talked about the team's inability to find a sustainable period of success, you know, where habits started to form and they felt good about themselves when they're walking off the court. Steve Kerr, you know, also talked about the lack of connectivity and execution on either side of the court. And Kerr and Curry both took responsibility for the team's struggles. You know, and it doesn't help that, you know, Klay Thompson, you know, had continued to struggle from the field, which adds insult to injury. You know, that's Curry's right-hand man. You know, they're the Splash Brothers. So when Klay's not on, you know, and Curry's been balling and playing some of his best basketball, so when Klay can't come in and compliment that, that's not really a recipe for success. That's a recipe for failure. And then you got these guys, the young guys, you know, coming in. You know, you don't have James Wiseman out there. And then Kuminga, obviously, is not playing either. So, you know, you got a lot of, well, I think Kuminga might be playing. I can't remember if Kuminga is injured or not, but regardless, the younger guys have not really been living up to the hype, you know, thus far. So, you know, Warriors are currently 6-9 and in 12th place in the Western Conference. Still very early in the season, man. I do trust that Steph and Klay and the Warriors will still get on track. But you all, you know, obviously you got to wonder, you know, looking at the situation that happened with Draymond Green and Jordan Poole, you know, can that translate to that lack of connectivity that they've had? You know, obviously they play well at home, but on the road, it's like, you know, that, I don't care what anybody says. I still think that that has a lasting effect on the team. Obviously, not when you hear them saying words like they're scattered and there's not, you know, there's a lack of connectivity and all this other stuff, like, that's just goes to show you, like, you know, something's missing. You know, that happened before the season really kind of threw everything off track. You know, regardless of if they were able to, you know, come together and apologize about it, it's still lingering in the back of everybody's minds, like, dang, that really happened. But like I said, I do trust the Warriors to right the ship. I trust Steph Curry. I think Klay, you know, he could get hot at any given moment. So, you know, I definitely, you know, trust those guys. We're talking about four-time NBA champions, man. They've been here. They've done that. And I expect them to right the ship, and I think that they'll be just fine. But, hey, man, that's all I had to talk about, man. I appreciate everybody again giving me a little bit of your time for some good, healthy sports talk, man. Keep rocking with me, man. I'll be back next week. Sorry I missed the last last few weeks, man. I got a little sick, man, but I'm back to normal, man. Back to talk to sports. So, again, I appreciate everybody rocking with me. And I'll see y'all next week, man. Peace, love, and blessings, man. And I hope y'all have a happy Thanksgiving, y'all. Peace. I'm out.